for Wednesday, March 21st, 2007. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5542 and Senate Bill 5543, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. And Mr. Siebert, I believe you have something to share with the committee.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, at your place you'll also find a copy of selected statutes governing OEB's grant program based on the questions we had yesterday. And on the second page of that is the second paragraph is the Restoration and Protection Research Fund, but I also included some of the general sections on the grant program and a section on the operating fund and the grant improvement fund, so you can read a little bit about what the statutory uses of those funds are.
And I believe we, if you'd like to come forward, I believe where we left off was on page 6. If you'd like to start there, and don't be disrupted if in like 3 minutes I hand the gavel to Senator Nelson and leave. Also, Representative Clem will not be here today, although I don't know where everybody else is.
Well, Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Beiler with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and again, at my right is Lisa Pearson from Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management, and on my left is Melissa Leone of OEB staff, our Senior Policy and Legislative Coordinator. Appreciated the conversation and discussion from yesterday, and Mr. Chair, I'll try to move through the remaining elements of the first chapter, as well as move rather briskly through chapter two, as well as a lot of the questions that were raised yesterday directly related to some of the points that we make in our budget driver discussion. With that, I would in starting on page 6 of chapter 1, and we'll all again have a PowerPoint presentation to help move the discussion along as well. I just wanted to point out, on the heels of the discussion we had yesterday with respect to OEB's investments, the grant investments that our board makes, this pie chart shows the investments made this biennium through last week, where we had a board meeting in Eugene and allocated and distributed about roughly about $10 million, I believe, of funding to a variety of different grant types. But what I want to point out to you today, and probably the most the stark contrast here is between our capital and non-capital funding, is you'll see the restoration slice of this pie is the overwhelming piece of pie here of this chart, 65%, but also the acquisition piece at about 10 o'clock, 8.5%. When you put those together, you're looking at nearly 74-75% of the total investments that we make. Those are capital-funded projects. The rest of the remainder, the technical assistance, the assessments, the council support, education, monitoring, recovery planning, and research, are all non-capital investments. And when you look at those as a percentage of the total investments, you'll see those are relatively small investments. And that is certainly an area that our, from a staff perspective and from a board perspective at OEB, we have is challenging for us. We have it makes for difficult decisions in terms of how to distribute those dollars. And in some cases, it's a question of strategically, where do we make our focus with those limited funding funds, and or do we try to distribute it to all those purposes and somewhat thin the soup as a result? But we feel that we make strong investments in those areas when we do have grant cycles, and we certainly have seen that despite the limited funding of non-capital funds, our councils and districts and other partners have done an excellent job of making the most of those funds with respect to the work that they're funded with. Next, I want to spend just a little bit of time talking about the different distribution methods for our funding. And I won't go into too much depth on this, but we do run a more than just a regular grant program. Our grant program is I think, very, very thorough, very strong. We have two cycles per year, four per biennium. And they're 21-week cycles through our regular grant program. They are guided by administrative rule. We provide guidance and workshops for our stakeholders and applicants to help them understand how to navigate through our process as successfully as possible. We offer, through this regular grant program, we offer the acquisition, the restoration, technical assistance, monitoring, assessment, education grants, every cycle involves one of a capital opportunity, that is the restoration and acquisition. With less frequency do we offer the non-capital grant types, just because the limited funding doesn't allow us to have as many offerings for those particular grant types. In addition to our regular grant cycle, we have other ways of getting investments on the ground and out to our partners. We have what we call non-competitive awards. Those tend to be grant distributions to other entities, including state agencies, much of which are targeted towards moving forward on elements of implementing the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. And I'll give you as an example an area that we frequently or that's common for us to invest in through this particular mechanism is for monitoring. And it's for monitoring that is more of a trend-based monitoring on a broader scale than our local partners would be capable of doing. So we have partnerships with Department of Environmental Quality and the Department of Fish and Wildlife, for instance, where we have developed good monitoring projects over time that will help us in understanding the value of the work that we're making on the ground. We also have a small grant program. This is a program that is where the board allocates money to 28 small grant teams. These teams are formed of tribes, soil and water conservation districts, and watershed councils. And they essentially are giving a block of money, and they make decisions on how to distribute it within certain guidelines. And the grants that are involved, there's a reason we call it small grants. It's because those grants are $10,000 or less. And it's been a successful program. It's been good for in terms of helping augment the collaboration between councils, districts, and tribes in distributing these dollars. But it's also been a strong program in terms of being able to be kind of an entry level opportunity for landowners to get involved at a relatively low risk in terms of their involvement in our program. And you'd be surprised how many projects there are of $10,000 or less that private landowners are interested in engaging in. So that's been a positive program for us. We also are able to distribute monies through pre-existing mechanisms, and we look for opportunities to do that to gain efficiencies and effectiveness in terms of our investments. And the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program is an example of that. There we partner with the Department of Ag, Oregon Department of Agriculture, and the Farm Services Agency to distribute funding targeted towards riparian enhancement and protection along river miles throughout the state. This is mostly on ag land or primarily on ag lands. And this is a program that the state provides through OWEB match funding, and it's a very strong match. We get about 80% federal dollars to our 20% state funds. From a OWEB perspective, it's a very cost-effective way to achieve high ecological value through a strong partnership. The last example here is fishing grants. This is the Klamath fishing disaster from last year, as you may recall, where the governor declared an emergency and had an executive order asking a number of agencies, including OWEB, to look at ways where we could help alleviate some of the stress of the emergency. And so we developed a special grant process that was targeted towards meeting our existing objectives, watershed restoration, but created a preference around that along the coastal communities to hire displaced fishermen to help implement these projects. And the emergency board awarded some funding last year for that project, and we have funded, I think, over $2 million worth of projects, provide employment for over 100 fishermen for a variety of different projects. What's unique about this process is it's been streamlined somewhat. Not only is the preference unique, but it's been streamlined, and we have a rolling cycle. So we receive applications as they come in, rather than having strict deadlines, and have formed a special team to help us review those projects.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. Just when you were talking about these grants, and you mentioned the tribes, I found out yesterday that my tribe up in Umatilla County is going to receive a $450,000 study grant on their phase three and through the Bureau of Reclamation, the federal government, I think it's the Bureau of Reclamation. I'll have to check on that. Maybe it's the Department of Interior. That's probably it. But does your agency ever use any of these grants to partner with some of those studies? And how does that work?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, we certainly can. And with respect to partnering with tribal government, we have a history of that. But I think our history has also been that the tribes have often found resources available from other sources. But my expectation is that we'll, and my hope is that we'll find opportunities to partner with tribes, and we certainly do where those opportunities arise.
We have a request for a study for the Department of Resources, and you have some grant programs, and now we have the tribes getting this federal money that they're going to do a study. Is there some way that all these things can be coordinated so we don't have all these different studies? I don't know if there's any way that can be done.
Senator, I think that would be more an issue for the Water Resources Department, because their water supply conservation study is, you know, it's a big item.
I'm just thinking everything's related in this thing.
This is the water world where there needs to be better coordination, but certainly I think we should mention it to the Water Resources Department. So, okay.
Thank you. We'll go to the next. I won't belabor this slide. We've talked a little bit about the capital-non-capital ratio yesterday. What I want to point to here are the black dots that you see on associated with each of the biennia on this slide. And those represent the numbers of grant agreements or interagency agreements that are related to the investments that the OWEB board makes. And what's interesting on this is that you see from 99-01 to 01-03 a big spike in terms of the number of agreements. But then, despite the increase in funding over the last three biennia, we've remained relatively static in terms of the number of agreements that we have. We think what we're seeing from that is that the value per agreement is increasing. And just between this biennium and the previous biennium, our average dollar amount for a restoration grant has almost doubled. It was about $66,000 per grant, per restoration grant, last biennium. This biennium, it's about $118,000. So that, while we may not be seeing more agreements coming through the door in terms of a workload issue for us, it does raise issues of concern for us in terms of being able to manage the however many we see. The value of these are increasing, and our responsibility as stewards of the Measure 66 funding increases. The stakes get higher, I guess, for each of these grants that we have as the complexity of the grant increases and the dollar relative dollar amount for these grants increases.
Tom, I have a question about that. What are the budget drivers? Is it the technical assistance component of the grant? Are you seeing that there's some more money going towards consultants? Is it actually the physical, you know, on-the-ground equipment that's being used? Or?
Yeah, Madam Chair, it's a variety of factors. I mean, costs are increasing, certainly, just generally. Oil costs affect a lot of our grants in terms of the type of materials that might be involved, whether it's steel or for fencing, those types of things, or piping for east side projects dealing with water conservation. But we're also just seeing our grantees, our applicants, are getting better and better. They're getting more sophisticated, and the projects are becoming more and more complex. And so we're seeing some very big ticket items come in the door in terms of applications that are achieving more on the ground on a grander scale contained within one application. Just briefly, our importance to Oregonians, you know, part of what we're about is not only just improving watershed health, but it's a quality of life issue for many Oregonians. A lot of folks live in Oregon or move to Oregon because of the natural attributes of our environment, and OEB certainly plays a role in that. We also play a role in that in terms of building community ethic around the watershed health and building trust around natural resources issues. Many partners we have, I won't spend much time on this other than suggest that partners are critical for us. Our success is in developing partnerships and having as many people around the table as possible. Now, I'm moving into Chapter 2, the budget driver discussion. And again, I want to emphasize that the very good discussion we had yesterday actually moved into a lot of the issues that that are pertinent to OEB and our agency from a budget driver perspective. So I won't belabor these points too much. I'd be happy to take any questions. But one of the issues that we focus on is 2014. And I can't recall that I mentioned this yesterday, but one of the things about ballot measure 66 that makes it very unique is that it's time limited. It will expire in 2015, January of 2015, if the voters of Oregon decide not to reauthorize it in November of 2014. And there, by the Constitution itself, essentially directs that vote to take place. We don't know at OEB whether it'll get reauthorized or not, and that's not our concern as much as our concern is to know that we have this window of opportunity, this time frame, and you'll note on this timeline that 2007, where we're at now, is about smack dab in the middle of the lifespan of ballot measure 15. With each passing month and year, that window of opportunity for us to make strong investments towards ecological health and improvement of water quality and fish and wildlife habitat gets smaller. Our challenge is to do the best we can with the time and funding that we have available to us, and it drives everything that we do. And there is a sense of urgency that we have in terms of being able to put our best foot forward now rather than waiting 2 years or 4 years or let alone 6 years from now when we'll be maybe a little bit too late to be able to make effective change. I believe we may have looked at this slide a bit yesterday. This essentially are the allocations of funding from the by the legislature for our grant programs. Again, the point here is mainly just to show that the steep increase of capital funds relative to the non-capital and how that ratio has shifted in recent biennia. And again, the reminder here is that the concern that we have as an agency is the decreasing federal funding that we've seen in the last two federal fiscal years and the expectation that that will continue. The last budget driver that I want to mention to you is the salmon recovery planning, which OEB has been a key funder and participant in terms of the development of conservation and recovery plans. This has to do with the Endangered Species Act, both at a federal and state level, and has been a key focus over the last couple of years for the natural resources agencies and will continue to be a key focus in future years. And what you see here is a map showing the geographic units for different salmon and steelhead species. There is a timeline associated with completing those projects that's in your book, and I won't go into that level of detail, but I think what I would point out here is that we continue to evolve under the Oregon plan in terms of how we focus our energy and how strategic we can be in terms of our investments. This is another layer of information and planning that will drive OEB's activities as well as the activities of other natural resources agencies over time, especially the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The what's been comforting and what I think is the strength of our conservation and recovery planning efforts in the state of Oregon is that these conservation plans, that while they do provide strategic tools for us at a broad geographic scale, they're built on the watershed assessments, many of which OEB funded with the local groups as the building blocks for these tools. So there's a definite connection between the local and the broader geography that we're dealing with in terms of listing issues. We'll want to continue that, and I think it's a key concern from OEB's perspective that we have very active involvement from local communities and watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts to help implement these plans once they're developed. And we've been working closely with those local groups to do that. My sense is that these local groups are happy to pitch in. They just want to know what target to shoot at, and that's part of what this planning process will help us get done.
A question, Madam Chair?
Senator Gavakian has a question.
We had what was, I thought, and I don't want to spend much time on it, we got into this fascinating discussion yesterday about the dams precluding areas that the salmon used to run in. And I'm guessing part of that big blank white area in the bottom right corner of the state is some of that area geographically. I'm just curious, quickly summarize where those fish runs used to go in that geographical area before we had the dams?
Madam Chair, Senator Vakian, I can give you a very, very high-level sense.
Yeah.
When you look, you're absolutely right, and you look at just to the right of that green, the southwest corner of the state is the Klamath Basin. And as we discussed yesterday with Representative Garrard, there used to be salmon, coho salmon, and I think Chinook that would go up into the Klamath, and those are blocked off by a system of dams right at the border, essentially. We also have in central Oregon historical fish runs that had been blocked by the Pelton Round Butte system, and that we're now in a process of reintroduction in that area. So that's a very exciting area in terms of being able to rebuild stocks that had been eliminated through significant fish passage issues. You also have fish passage issues on the Snake River that affect some of that white region in the Powder Basin and Owyhee Malheur area, that where the, historically you've seen fish runs come up through the Columbia Snake system.
I'm guessing that since the area is white, that there are no current plans to restore in those areas in either the short term, like the next biennium, or the long term. Or have we come to a point where it just is not viable to address those areas anymore?
Madam Chair, Senator Vakian, the geographic units that you see there are federal designations. So that this is driven by the federal government determining what they feel is viable for recovery. And so I think that my sense is that their thinking is when you have dam systems that may not be coming out in the near term, they're not focusing on those areas above the dam just because of the logistics.
I think that answered my question. The dams do preclude viability in doing something different. There's not a way to work around that, is there?
Not at this time. Unless you're talking about taking out the dams, they can't.
No, you use ladders in some rivers.
Some, but yeah. The other thing, just for the committee to know, is that the area, the white area, doesn't mean that OEB doesn't have activities going on with watershed councils for other species. They're looking at,
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's absolutely correct. And we don't just focus on salmon. We focus on a wide variety of issues.
I think Representative Garrard has a question, and Representative Furley, there's a lot of eyebrow action going on here.
My arm hurts.
Not that bad.
In regards to Senator Avakian's question, and Tom, correct me if I've got any of the details wrong, but there are plans to work around those dams, and Pacific Power in particular is working and has been told basically to cart the fish around, truck them and cart them around the dams in order to keep the flow going. I've simplified that, Tom, but...
Madam Chair, Representative Garrard, that's absolutely right. And I think that it may be a chicken and egg issue here in terms of the federal government and how they, the geography of their listing areas. They're not going to start drawing those lines above areas that are blocked by dams until those fish passage issues are resolved. And it's true that there is some opportunity with the Klamath area.
Should have said a smolten egg instead of chicken egg.
Yeah.
Do you want to follow up?
Nope.
Okay. We don't restore chicken habitat.
Yeah.
Good response.
Yeah, I also just wanted to comment, Senator Abaki, in the Deschutes Basin, because as part of the FERC relicensing for the Pelton Round Butte complex, there were conditions imposed to restore the steelhead and salmon above Lake Billy Chinook, which would put them in the upper Deschutes, Crooked River, Metolius basins. And the issue that we have, this is actually rather fascinating. I'm looking forward to seeing this. It's like a Star Wars thing to me. But the issue is getting the fish, the smolts, downriver, not the adults up. And the problem we have in the Deschutes is Lake Billy Chinook, with three different rivers that feed that, you've got this stratification of water temperature, and that really messes up the smolt's sense of travel. And they are in the process of installing a very sophisticated device to help the smolts get back down through that stratified water. And, you know, we're pretty excited about this. I mean, I'd love to go steelheading, you know, in Squaw Creek outside of Sisters instead of driving all the way down to Maupin. But there's a lot of effort being put into this, and so even though right now it's not listed as an ESU above Pelton Round Butte, we're doing a lot of work up there restoring habitat and trying to get the fish back up, and OWEB plays a very, very key role in doing this.
Yeah, one more, Madam Chair. Thank you for that, Representatives. That's very helpful. What prompted the questions for me is not even so much an interest in... I'd love to see the fish runs restored, but in our relationship with the federal government, because, frankly, the hairs bristle on my neck when I hear, even though I know it's by necessity sometimes, that the federal government is in charge of doing some things which I think maybe historically have been the province of the state, or even if not the province of the state, which are really an obligation of the state. And I don't have a good sense of, even though your agency, your board is obviously very involved in accomplishing some things in this area, I don't have a good sense of how dependent we are on the federal government, how much the government dictates either through resources or federal law what we can do. And I would love to hear that we're in charge of this thing. But I don't know what the answer is. By this thing, I mean everything that we just talked about with regard to fish restoration.
Madam Chair, Senator Abaki, was that a hypothetical question?
That's
or
I don't think it was very hypothetical, and it relates directly to funding.
No. Yeah.
Because as we become, I'll try not to belabor it too much, Madam Chair, but just with your board, but there are certain missions that the state wants to take on, such as fish restoration, but that which over the course of years we have become completely dependent on federal money in order to accomplish our mission, and therefore end up being almost completely dependent on federal mission in order to get the money to accomplish what might not be our mission. Do you follow me?
Absolutely.
And I don't know if that applies here.
Madam Chair, Senator Abaki, you raise some very, very good issues and astute observations in terms of the delicate dance we have with the federal government on some of these issues. The Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds in its origins, was premised on the notion of the state controlling its own destiny with respect to salmon recovery. The whole idea of the Oregon plan at its beginning was to avoid federal listings of species, and that we would make strong investments and commitments among state natural resources agencies toward that end. Ultimately, obviously, we weren't successful in avoiding those listings, but the Oregon plan survives, and we continue to be a leader not only in the Northwest but nationally in terms of what a state and frankly local and volunteer sources can do in terms of improving the habitat and the water quality needed to restore salmon and steelhead and improve watershed health. We have a long way to go. This is a long journey. It's more than a 15-year period that's going to be able to turn these events around. We're talking about impacts that have accrued over 100 years period in terms of detrimental impacts to the environment, and we need to do it in a way, I believe, that brings people along and doesn't impose restrictions on them, but they do it because they believe it's the right thing to do and it's in their best interest. This program at OWEB provides the fuel for that, but it does take time. But we are seeing progress. It's difficult to measure. Sometimes the progress is measured better with the partnerships and the personalities that we bring in between federal and local landowners, state government, than we can say that we've delisted a salmon. The delistings are going to take a long time. Our hope is that while we do have created this wonderful system through the Oregon plan, we still have a very delicate relationship with the federal government. They can drive us in one direction or another depending on their policies and the law, federal laws, and they certainly have an influence on what we do with respect to funding. And we talked yesterday about how OWEB has been very dependent upon federal funding to be able to manage our non-capital grant program to date. And that's an area of concern for us, and especially with declining resources in the federal government, that will continue to be a concern, I think, for us in the future.
Senator, also the PCSRF funds, which have only been available since, 2000?
Correct.
That was part of the genesis of those, is to help the states where they had declining salmon runs, although unfortunately, those dollars seem to be waning. I think it's important to mention, though, that the federal agencies do participate in a lot of on a lot of projects. They provide a lot of in-kind support. The and watershed councils, the federal agencies, are typically participants. And I know when I worked in the Tualatin, a lot of the technical assistance that I was able to get were from federal agencies, the Bureau of Reclamation, from different agencies, Bureau of Land Management, that provide technical assistance that our state agencies don't either have the capabilities or the availability of resources. So they have been a partner. Certainly it would be nice to see that PCSRF funding continue or expand, but I unfortunately don't see that happening.
Can I belabor it for just one more minute?
Sure, one more minute, and then we're going to move on to performance measures.
I really appreciate what you said, but I think it confirms part of the concern I have, which is not a criticism at all of your board, which I think is doing an outstanding job in this regard. But this is the kind of thing that we hear from agency after agency after agency, and what I would love to see built into our ways and means process and our revenue process at some point is a manner in which the state is able to stand on its own two feet, create its own policy without having to be concerned about abiding by policies outside of our state, which we unfortunately are in order to keep our revenue stream coming in to accomplish some mission at all. But that discussion is not only absent from most of our ways and means discussions, but we are the antithesis of it, because we are always trying to prioritize ways to secure federal matching funds and matching grants. And I think that in the long run, what that really means is we don't feel compelled to look at new revenue streams or other sources which allow us to disconnect ourselves from federal dependency.
Well, with all due respect, Senator, I do think this is one of the better programs where we actually have done that. I mean, we have an independent funding source, which is Measure 66.
It's not a criticism of the program. It's a matter of, I believe, in order to accomplish the mission of the program, we're somewhat dependent on that relationship. And it's the dependency that concerns me. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we are subject to the Federal Endangered Species Act, so there's only so much independence we can exert, because that is one of the drivers, is, you know, working through the Federal Endangered Species Act, and there's no way we can preempt it. But I think it's a good discussion. Yeah. But I'd like to move on to performance measures, because I promised the chair that we would get through that. So if you
I'm done, Madam Chair. Thank you for indulging me.
That is, we appreciate that.
Oh, Madam Chair, if I could invite Greg Sieglitz, our monitoring reporting manager, to trade seats with Melissa Leone. He'll he's been our point person on developing our performance measures, and will be able to respond to questions at a more detailed level than I will. What I'd like to do, though, to start out the discussion is to frame the discussion on our performance measures is to let you know that our performance measures at OWEB, well, we're a relatively new agency. Our performance measures are even newer. Our first performance measures were adopted in 2004, the fall of 2004. I started at OWEB in January of 2005, and one of the discussions that I had with the legislature at that time was a concern. There's some irony here, based on Senator Avakian's comments. I was concerned at that time about the overhaul of reporting measures that we had for the federal government, for our federal funds. There was a very fast track revision to the performance measures we had for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds at hand. And the discussion that we had with LFO staff and the legislature at that time was, boy, this may be an opportunity for us to better align our state measures with some of these federal measures, because that we don't want to be heading off in different directions when we're actually looking at very similar high-level outcomes in terms of the ultimate goals. And so we had a budget note attached to our budget for us to report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee over the interim on that particular issue, and to make proposals to better align our performance measures with those federal performance measures. Well, a little more irony here is that those federal performance measures did not move on the fast track that we thought they would. They're still in the works. But nevertheless, it gave us an opportunity to take another hard look at our performance measures. As a result of that, in November of 2006, we proposed and the JLAC committee added two new performance measures that we'll walk you through, as well as amended two existing performance measures. I want to add, though, as a result of that analysis, we are proposing changes to an additional five measures that were adopted in 2004 as part of this process. But I want to point out that these are minor changes. These are clarification issues that we're not changing direction in terms of the measures as much as providing greater clarity for us so that we can provide meaningful reports over time in terms of our performance. The other thing that I wanted to just frame up for you in terms of these performance measures before we start walking you through them is that I really look at these performance measures as having several tiers in terms of what they are asking us to report on. One tier involves performance measures 10, 11, and 12, and those have to do with ESA listings, whether the state or federal, and whether they've been delisted or whether we've avoided a listing under those pieces. And quite frankly, we find those, while they're very valid outcomes and certainly what we're trying to make our investments toward, we are challenged in terms of being able to connect the dots between our performance and those ultimate outcomes. Those are very, very high level, very relevant, but it's difficult for us to pull together metrics that are effective in measuring our performance vis-a-vis those performance measures. Still, they're very important indicators to be tracking over time. We have a second layer or tier of performance measures that that are valuable for us in terms of being able to measure trends, ecological trends over time. We'll step you through those. The point I'd make on those is that OWEB doesn't have full control over those performance measures either. Many of those performance measures are tracking the efforts of other agencies, our sister agencies in state government, who are doing the labor in terms of monitoring those trends over time. We'll certainly work with them. Nevertheless, those measures are important for us in terms of being able to help track the effectiveness of our investments over time as well. And then lastly, the third tier that I would mention is that we do have a number of performance measures that are, I think, more directly connected to the operations of our agency, turning payments around that we get invoices on, how many of our grants are relevant to the restoration priorities that we adopt. And we'll walk you through those as well. Anyway, I want to just take a minute to kind of step you through that, because you're going to see as we go through this discussion, there are going to be some of these that we're going to better connect to than others. And nevertheless, we're probably the main point is that these are all relatively new and will take some time for us to be able to have meaningful reports on in the long term. I am going to we're going to have some PowerPoints on this, but they're going to be very high level, and I would suggest that you use the board book. This again is chapter 3, or our agency presentation book, chapter 3. I'll be using that to walk you through these different performance measures. We have 15 total, and just to move through, starting with performance measure 1, this is an operations performance measure, the percentage of total funding used in agency operations. This is one where we're requesting a change. This had historically been, since 2004, had been based on total agency expenditures, in other words, the grant funding decisions. And our recommendation is to actually look at the total revenue that moves through OWEB's agency. And the reason that we think that's relevant and appropriate is that our agency has actions related to not only just the expenditures that the board makes, but also the money that's passed through to other entities, including the state agencies, where we enter into interagency agreements to manage those resources. Again, it's all about OWEB's responsibility as the one agency to administer these funds and our stewardship responsibility in tracking these dollars. Ultimately, when we get audited by the Secretary of State's office every biennium, the accountability rests with us in terms of making sure that those dollars are spent appropriately. And so we do provide a nexus with those other agencies who receive pass-through funding through legislative allocations. And so this these changes in this particular measure would account for that workload associated with that. The second performance measure involves outside funding. Again, on the heels of Senator Avakian's statement, we do look at other funding sources, and it's very important in terms of our program. We require, by rule, 25% of each grant have match funding, or whether it's other funds or in-kind funds. We have exceeded that greatly over the recent years, as you will see, approaching almost 200%. We're recommending a change here. Our target has been, I think, 200% in the past, and we're recommending moving that to 150%, and primarily because our best estimate is that those federal resources are going to continue to decline, both in terms of federal funding and in terms of federal staffing. And oftentimes, grantees will use federal funding to match our grants. They'll also use the technical assistance and the staffing in-kind work from federal agencies as match for our grants. It's our expectation that we're going to see that decline in the coming years. And so the idea here would be to provide what we think is a more realistic target, still in well in excess of our rule requirement of 25% match. The third performance measure involves restoration. This is the percentage of OWEB watershed restoration investments that address established basin and watershed restoration priorities. This has been in place since 2004, and I'll point out to you that we're not where I want to be in terms of this performance measure. We are still in the progress of or in the process of adopting and developing and adopting the restoration priorities in all the basins around the state. We've made very good progress over this current biennium, in part due to the reorganization that I did administratively and that will be subject of one of the option packages later in our discussion. And our hope is that, and expectation is that we will have all of the restoration priorities by basin online, adopted by our board. Many of them have been adopted conceptually by the board. We don't want to bring this online statewide until all of the basin restoration priorities have been adopted, so that we're treating each of the different watersheds equally in terms of how we put this on board. But our expectation is that during this upcoming biennium, we'll have those online, and then we'll begin to be able to measure our investments formally through those adopted restoration priorities. I can tell you now that based on what we're seeing in terms of the restoration priorities, informally, in terms of our investments, that we're doing quite well in terms of aligning those investments with those restoration priorities.
Questions at this point? I had two questions, actually. On the match funding, do you include the value of volunteer labor?
Mr. Chair, I believe we do.
Yes. And in terms of the restoration, where the obvious, and you've identified why, you don't have the actual data, is the intent that when all that is in place that you'll basically have the numbers for the year since 2004, or will you start it with the coming year?
Mr. Chair, that's actually a good question. I think that I think we could cast back and provide those numbers once those are online.
Because it might give a better baseline.
Yeah, great observation.
Okay. Any additional? Seeing none, please proceed.
Thank you.
We'll try to do about three at a time and take questions.
Very good. Number four is the percentage of complete grant payments, grant payment requests paid within 30 days. This has been online since 2004. By statute, there is a 45-day requirement for turning around payments, grant payment requests or invoices. By rule, we have a 30-day timeline. Very important for our grantees. These folks are not flush with money, and being able to turn these payments around quickly is very important. And we've been very successful in our fiscal program of being able to meet that requirement. Performance measure number five is the percentage of monitored native fish species that exhibit increasing or stable levels of abundance. This is essentially a performance measure to measure the trend of monitored native fish species. And this was changed as part of the November 2006 recommendations that were approved of by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. And this better aligns, it's more measurable than the previous performance measure, and better aligns with our ability to work with our sister agencies who are tracking this data. Number six is, again, an ecological trend that's important for our work, and this one involves plant communities, the percentage of improved riparian stream miles, of the total stream miles in Oregon. It will provide a yardstick for us to be able to understand progress of our investments over time in terms of improving on that particular ecological value. Again, this one has some proposed new wording as part of this process. And again, just to clarification, it's not a change in the overall intent, but a clarification.
Questions? Seeing none, please proceed.
Another ecological trend that in number seven, dealing with water quality, is percentage of monitored stream sites with A, significantly increasing trends in water quality, B, water quality in good to excellent condition, and C, decreasing trends in water quality. This is one that we're recommending new wording. This aligns with an existing DEQ performance measure. This is work that DEQ exclusively or primarily at least performs, and I believe is also in alignment with an Oregon benchmark. This would be a good measure. The reason you don't see numbers here is that there are three targets essentially embodied in this performance measure. And if you'd like more detail on that, Greg Siegelitz can provide you more detail. But the key here is that this is important in terms of over the long term, in terms of being able to measure the progress of our investments. But we are going to be relying on another agency to help us pull together that data. Number eight is work plans, the extent to which watershed councils funded by OWEB accomplish their work plans each biennium. OWEB has a special and direct connection with watershed councils. By statute, we are directed to provide them support, and we go through a competitive grant process once a biennium. Our next board decision on funding councils going into next biennium will actually occur in May. And through that process, we look at the work plans that they've established for the previous biennia to see how well they've been able to implement those plans. We are very fortunate in this state to have a group of watershed councils, predominantly who are overachievers. These folks are not funded as well as I know they would like to be, and frankly as well as they need to be for our purposes as well. But they do achieve a whole heck of a lot given the funding that they do have. And so this is an important KPM with some new data where we've adjusted the target, I believe, as part of this new process, or as part of the process we went through last this current biennium. Number nine, another...
I'll wait till he's done.
Number nine is another ecological trend. In this case, this is the percentage of native fish where monitoring needs have been quantified that were monitored to a level considered adequate under the Oregon Plan Monitoring Strategy and ODFW's Native Fish Status Review. This, as opposed to the earlier fish population performance measure, is more of a measure of the effectiveness of our monitoring planning and strategy. This was adopted in the fall of 06 as well, and fits well within our responsibilities within the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds family of agencies in terms of monitoring, coordinating monitoring efforts among the agencies.
Questions?
Yes, Representative Garag.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, KPM number 7. Could you explain what the asterisks mean, or stars, or whatever they represent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, those are there because there are three components to this performance measure, so it was difficult for us with the space that we had in this document to be able to list out those three different components. You'll see in the top of when the performance measure is described, you've got A, B, and C. So there are three different separate components to this performance measure. If you'd like, I can ask Greg to walk you through those in a little more detail. That would be helpful.
I don't think that's necessary. Just a comment, Mr. Chair. We have three different state agencies, one monitoring the quantity of water, one monitoring the quality of water, and the other monitoring what color is the water on cloudy days. There is such a duplication, and I think Senator Avakian alluded to the same thing. We have three different agencies working with the same water, and are you sharing the information, or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, you raise a very good question, and there we do have within the natural resources management of the state and on federal issues as well, separate agencies charged with separate resource concerns, resource management concerns, that invariably overlap or influence each other. And While I can't say that we've perfected our coordination, I can tell you that over the last 10 years, we've seen great improvement in terms of the level of communication and coordination between the agencies. And I attribute that to the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds and the leadership of the legislature and the governor's office in directing those agencies to talk to each other, listen to each other, and work with each other to a higher degree than perhaps happened in the past. That's happening not only at the state level, but it's happening between the state and the federal government as well. It's an iterative process. It's a long process, and it takes focus and dedication in order to make that work. But I think we are making improvements along those lines.
Mr. Chair, I would think perhaps a notation or a directive of that nature might be appropriate in this particular instance.
Anything additional? Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, thank you. We're now moving to a suite of performance measures that I mentioned at my comments that prefaced this discussion. These I consider to be very high-level outcomes for our work, and they are relevant to our work. The extent to which OWEB has control over these outcomes is debatable at best, I'd say. But we are happy to track these outcomes, and both 10 and 11 involve tracking the numbers of either federally endangered species or state endangered species that are delisted in the past year, while number 12 deals with kind of an interesting nuance on that theme, tracking state actions that have affected listing decisions to avoid a listing decision, essentially. And on that last one in particular, I think it's germane to recent events in Oregon, where we have been able to avoid a listing on the coastal coho on the north and mid-coast of Oregon, I believe, through large part, actions of the state, where we, through our investments in monitoring, through our changes in management practices, and through our work to improve habitat quality, provided information that was useful for the federal government to make its determination not to list that species.
Again, Tom, how much duplication between state and federal endangered species acts? We have some listed, the feds don't, but when the feds list one, it automatically goes on the state list, I believe. But how much duplication as far as money that's being spent on the Endangered Species Act is occurring?
Mr. Chair, Representative Girard, I think that from the state of Oregon's perspective, we're doing a good job of trying to not recreate the wheel where we can avoid it. And what we're doing now, the slide earlier that showed this, the map of Oregon with those different units, those federal units for recovery of salmon and steelhead, we are implementing both state and federal recovery plans simultaneously, so that we're killing two birds with a stone, although that's probably not the appropriate terminology to use in this case.
That would be endangered.
We're very sensitive to in terms of how we expend our resources, both in labor, in terms of the development of those plans, the staff work, as well as from an OWEB's perspective in terms of our investments of making sure that we're hitting the target squarely and that we're taking into account both the state and federal concerns relative to the species at issue. And I think this conservation recovery plan approach is really a great example of how we're trying to blend those together so that we're not creating two separate tracks that are essentially trying to do the same thing.
And this is just a muddy trail. The feds give you money to enforce Endangered Species Act. Does the state also create funds for the enforcement of the Endangered Species Act? and how do you differentiate and avoid duplication in the enforcement of those rules?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, speaking for OWEB, and the federal dollars that we're talking about are not distributed or are allocated for enforcement of the Endangered Species Act, but that rather they're made available to us to help us lift ourselves out of the listing status to recover the species. And that's the same with OWEB. We have no role, and our funds have no role in enforcement or any kind of regulatory action. Our focus is exclusively on making investments in communities to help improve water quality and habitat for fish and wildlife. So there isn't a nexus in terms of where OWEB's activities between federal money and enforcement.
I see a kind of a real dilemma in these performance measures. Not that they shouldn't be kept, but I mean, in a sense here, the legislature is having this internal debate, and the internal debate is information that they're hearing that you don't obviously control all the variables that might have an impact on these species. But at the same time, Measure 66 is devoting a very significant level of funds trying to restore habitat, and so there's somewhat of an expectation that there will be some impact, although timelines might not be, maybe not shouldn't be considered in years but in decades. So I don't know an easy solution to this. That's my underlying problem. I mean, if the standard was simply that you would create an, well, help improve an environment that would be more receptive to a species becoming more viable, that would be one criteria. But the species actually becoming more viable would be a totally different criteria and might be well beyond what you could impact. But then as a legislator, I have to ask the question, you know, why are you investing $70 million? I mean, that's what it really comes down to. I'm sure you have these debates internally. Do you have this debate with the IMST? Do they ever comment on some of these performance measures? And
Mr. Chair, I think the most direct answer is we try not to engage the IMST in policy level discussions. And we do ask for their input frequently on the science underlying our programs. But with respect to kind of the bigger picture policy issues, that's dangerous water for the IMST to be to dip their toes into. Mr. Chair, if I may, just based on your comment about these performance measures, we do struggle with these, and I think where I'm at is that these are important markers for Oregon and for OWEB, and as long as we're not expected to turn these around in an unrealistic time period, I think they're valuable markers for the ultimate goal of our funding. And the way I look at our suite of performance measures, again, we've got those three different levels, and they build on each other. There are some that really are very close measures of our agency's performance, and those are important to have. There are others that are measuring the ecological trends, which I think are very important. Those two build on each other, I believe, and those two then build on this third level, which are the ESA related performance measures.
Okay, let's go on to the final three.
As I mentioned at the outset, as part of the budget note review that we performed this biennium, we've proposed two new performance measures. Those are performance measures 13 and 14, dealing with salmon habitat quantity and salmon habitat quality. Those are directly related to federal performance measures that we have, and we think that they are again along the line of the ecological trends measures that are important for markers for our progress over time. I would maybe just mention on number 14, and Greg may be able to fill us in a little bit more, but you'll see in the targets there the INC. I think that means increase. It's very vague at this point, and part of the reason that is the case is that we're still in discussions with our federal and other state partners on a regional level of determining how to the appropriate metrics for measuring performance on KPM number 14. And, excuse me, lastly we have KPM number 15. This was adopted again in November of 2006, and it deals with customer service, which is something that we pay very close attention to at OWEB and find that is, like I'm sure all the agencies that you have heard from and will hear from, think is extremely important in terms of the success of our work. Here we did a survey of customer service in 2006, and had pretty good marks, very good marks in some cases, and we are going to plan on doing another survey in the near term as well with respect to this particular measure. With that, Senator, I would be happy to take any more questions.
I'll start the questions, and it's actually a question from Paul here. Is the 0.25, is that a quarter of a percent, or is that 25%?
I believe it's a quarter of a percent.
So if I read it, salmon habitat quantity, the percentage of potential aquatic salmon habitat available to salmon each year, and I say 0.25%, what does that mean?
Mr. Chair, I think I'll ask Greg to help clarify on that.
Question, Mr. Chair.
For the record, Greg Sieglitz, I'm the manager of the monitoring and reporting section at OWEB. The intent here is to depict a distinction between the total amount of salmon habitat and that component of salmon habitat that's not presently available to salmon. And as we make investments in improving access to that habitat, we want to measure what percentage of that area that they didn't have access to in the previous year did we make improvements to gaining access. So this is not a measure of all of the salmon habitat, but it's just the segment that's presently not available, and that's why the target is relatively small, that in any given year we wouldn't expect, at least initially with this first year of attempting to measure this, more than a quarter percent of those total number of miles that are presently not available.
Mr. Siebert?
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if the wording were to read the percentage of potential aquatic salmon habitat made available to salmon each year, it might be a little bit clearer, what the mayor's trying to get at.
Because, Mr. Chair, we're looking at incremental improvements. Yes.
Thanks. Otherwise, I think you have a fish tank somewhere. Okay. Additional questions?
I actually have a question. This is, Tom may or may not like this, but I guess, I read through these performance measures, and Tom, I've been working with this program for 10 years, back when it was GWEB and OWEB. And I guess what's missing here for me is the geographical context of, and I realize that we're sort of looking at the agency's performance as a whole, but somehow how that fits in with those ESUs and the populations that are at most risk. And the KPMs, when I read through all these, they are general. They're not focused on, we say percentage of riparian habitat, which actually I think should say miles instead of percentage, because the percentage number is so small. I think it might be a little more meaningful on that one. But I guess if you have any thoughts on that, and I do know that you track that, looking at the different basins and ESUs, but is there any way that could be translated into maybe in the future a KPM? Because there are areas where we really are seeing recovery, and it just isn't reflected in these KPMs for me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I think that's a very good observation, and would be happy to talk more with the committee and LFO staff on that. The one thing that we struggle with these KPMs is that if you start winnowing it down to smaller geographic areas, you likely would want to include most geographic areas. How many KPMs will you end up with if you go in that direction? So it's kind of a balancing act of not having, 40 KPMs, but also being able to provide the legislature and the public some sense of progress over time. And yes, indeed, we are tracking this information regardless of the KPM.
I guess my frustration, Mr. Chair, is that it just isn't reflected. If I'm just reading through these KPMs and I'm not familiar with the work that's done on the ground, it doesn't look like we're making a lot of progress, which we are. And part of it is they're new, and part of it is that this is, it's a long process. Habitat recovery is not something we see necessarily making progress biennium. It's a long process that a 20-year period is not unrealistic. So I guess that's part of my frustration looking through this, because I know that there's a lot of success stories that aren't articulated through this process. It's more of an observation than something to think about, and maybe Paul and I can have a beer and figure out how we do craft that. But it's just a frustration knowing a lot more about this program and where we've had a lot of really great success stories that wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for this money going on the ground. And it's probably in many basins, the Klamath, I think we're definitely seeing that, whether it's restoring habitat that wouldn't have had that funding before, or areas where we're seeing fish runs come back that we've never seen that before. And I think that is hard to reflect through this process.
Yes.
That's just a really beautiful statement, not even so much about what you're giving us here, but what we do in Ways and Means to try and objectify a way of tracking the dollars, which is a habit government gets into in virtually every aspect of government service now, and you miss out sometimes on the most important things by trying to objectify everything. Not that, Mr. Chair, I'm thinking we're going to change midstream here and adopt a different process, but it's certainly something to consider in future sessions.
Midstream was a good
term. Yeah, sorry.
Good terminology.
Anyway. But you did a good job at objectifying that.
That's good. We've been figuring out a way to come up with a bird in the hand.
You missed my small versus egg analogy when somebody said chicken or egg. I said, no, we're talking small. Anyway.
I think at this point it might be best that we stop for today, and we will come back to the prioritization on Monday and the POPs, the policy option packages. I will be absent for part of the meeting on Monday also, because we basically have, not related to this committee at all, we have double majority measures in House committees and Senate committees, so I'm being called out today and on Monday for both of those, for portions. But we will start first thing at 8:30 Monday morning. And with that, I will close the public hearing for today. And tomorrow morning, committee, we have the work session on the Department of Energy. So I'd ask you to review the memo. And we're going to have a very short time tomorrow because we have to get out of here by 9 o'clock tomorrow for people to be able to get everything set so they can get to the floor and everything for the
So be on time, is that the message?
That's a cordial message.
No, very cordial.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chair, just to note, we also have the Department of Water Resources, or Water Resources Department fee bill on the schedule tomorrow. I think they're going to try to leave us in committee till about 9:30. We'll see how successful they are in doing that, but
yeah,
we'll get do what we can.
I'll actually probably try to get I'll talk to the co-chairs. I'll try to get the committee out of here by 9:15 or so, because I think the House floor is going to be pretty full, and I don't want you actually
showing up right at the very end, although some of you have seats on
you
the House floor.
You can sit with me, Senator. I'll save you a seat.
Yeah. For some of us, there isn't much suspense in the co-chair's budget.
Yeah.
But with that, we're adjourned for today.
Thank you.